top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 435 of the Really Awful Movies podcast. Jeepers Creepers. Jeepers Creepers. Where'd you get those peepers? Now, this one is a really interesting mix of a bunch of different horror subgenres. And that includes the likes of a kind of rustic exploitation, Dark Knight of the Scarecrow / Wrong Turn, but also elements of something like a tourist trap. And it's intriguing because it takes both of these premises and puts them together, but also includes sort of a monstrous supernatural antagonist. So it really puts this into its own world and a cut above a lot of others of its ilk, especially coming out in the early 2000s. Now, this is a film that has since come under heavy scrutiny because the writer-director, Victor Salva, served time for, well, something really grotesque, sinister, and unseemly. And you can, if you're interested, you can read up on that yourself. And it's called into question fandom for this franchise, which I believe spawned three films, and put into the spotlight the question of whether you can separate art from an artist in the same way, I think, Roman Polanski. And it's quite interesting because I was... When I was determining what I should watch this week for the podcast, I was catching up on some talk about The Disaster Artist and also the infamous flop on which it was based, The Room, and how the Tommy Wiseau production was basically, well, it was production hell. And so by engaging with it and supporting it and going to these screenings of this film, you're really supporting a tyrannical Tommy Wiseau and a production that had people really under the gun because he was really a megalomaniac and someone who would put Orson Welles to shame. Similarly, when you look back at the director, I can't remember which Franco was responsible for The Disaster Artist, but he's subsequently been Me Too'd. And it's funny too, this also ladders back to Justin Long, who was in a feature called Barbarian, and he played a character who was Me Too'd in that one. Someone who, in order to fight a legal battle, has to quickly generate assets and goes to Detroit to sell a home, which was previously a rental property that he'd owned. That was quite an intriguing one, and also speaks to how Justin Long has made quite a career for himself after perhaps being best known for the likes of a Dodgeball or rom-coms or that kind of thing. And of course, starring in the ubiquitous Apple commercials in the 2000s, but he's become quite the stalwart in horror. But anyway, suffice it to say, I did not, going into this discussion of Jeepers Creepers, know to the extent Victor Salva had problems with the law. And it's not to say, you know, that would have informed my decision to podcast this regardless. I'm sort of more on the side of Larry David in the infamous Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where Larry David's character, eponymous character, is whistling Wagner. And he gets accosted and says by a guy who says, Larry, you are a self-hating Jew. How could you whistle this opera or whatever it was by this Wagner character? And I think the rejoinder is something like, I may be self-loathing, but it's not because I'm a Jew or something, of course. Larry David is very, very hilarious. And I think to a certain extent, you should be able to, when you're engaging with features like this, separate an artist from their art. You do so dispassionately and critically, but that's not to say that you should idolize by any means Roman Polanski personally. But that doesn't mean you can't, you know, enjoy The Fearless Vampire Killers or The Tenant or something to that effect. But there's definitely something equally unseemly about Victor Salva. And if I'm not mistaken, he actually included a reference or a joke to the very, very serious crimes for which he did time, serious prison time. So, I mean, although, I mean, this is in no means a defense of Silva, he claims that he's tried to, remedy the situation to the extent anyone can with the serious nature of his crimes, but also says he's done his time and has done his best to undergo therapy, and again, to the extent you believe anyone can who was convicted of these very heinous crimes. But still, there's no denying the fact that Jeepers Creepers is an incredibly evocative, an incredibly sinister, and very, very creative property. And you could see why it spawned its sequels. I mean, it definitely has a POV, and it definitely has that nebulous quality that you can only describe as atmosphere. And it's something that the Halloween Kills movie definitely had. When it allows shadows to be shadows and lights to be lights, it has this very, very cool aesthetic that really puts you and grounds you in a place. And what you have is a sibling duo, Justin Long as Derry, that's short for Darius, and his sister Trish, played by Gina Phillips, a Floridian actress, who I don't think has done much in addition to this film, but they're a brother and sister duo who is just coming back home from college, and when they encounter this disturbing roadside incident, which is this masked creature, in effect, who has a what looks like from a distance from the roadside a body slung over their shoulder. And this sets into motion a series of events that take the viewer on quite a journey, and it's a journey that is quite different from the likes of A Wrong Turn or A Tourist Trap. It leads you in one direction, but with its supernatural aspects, takes you in others too, and it's something that is much appreciated as a viewer when you have this kind of a subversion of your expectations from what could have been and what should have been your standard, I'm lost by the roadside, the standard TCM style setup and premise and conclusion. This is definitely not that. Now, it's quite interesting because your mind conjures remarks made by, like, you know, Roger Ebert about how horror principles always do unbelievably stupid things. Well, when this sibling duo, at least the male half of whom, sees this roadside event, instead of lead footing it to the nearest town, they decide to go back and investigate. And it's quite intriguing because you could scream at them for doing this, and there is a kind of meta reference, as was the post-Scream era's want, that the girl actually tells her brother that this is in the moment in the horror movie when everyone's yelling at you for being stupid. But she eventually relents when she's prompted to go back and investigate the incident, saying, well, that could be you. And that's very, very interesting, the way Justin Long's character goads her, cajoles her into investigating. And it turns out there's this long, grotesque pipe that's leading to God knows what. It's leading to this deep, dark hole, and its entrance is surrounded by crows, and this has a very mythical, very Halloween, very seasonal kind of design aesthetic. Again, Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, arguably the top made-for-TV horror of all time, other than Duel, with which this bears a striking resemblance as well, because there's a lengthy chase scene involving a mysterious vehicle too. So you have these kinds of a confluence of influences that makes this so intriguing and so very, very unique, especially when Derry, the Darius character played by Justin Long, slips into this pipe and finds himself in what can only be described as some Hieronymus Bosch type collection of bodies. And this is what I think draws parallels as well with the kinds of exploitation films that you typically see too. But I think he references it as a kind of a Sistine Chapel of bodies, but it is like a collage of different types of bodies with their body parts variously sewn together, and obviously the work of a deranged madman. And this is where Jeepers Creepers leads you down the garden path, because you think at this point you're in for what would become de rigueur at the time, a kind of a torture porn style movie in which Derry gets just trapped in this hole and is tortured, but he actually does escape from it and get back to his vehicle and get back to the road and manages to, with the help of his sister, escape at least for a time and to notify the authorities. So again, so many different twists and so many different turns that put this in a different realm from its contemporaries, and certainly the kind of film that you would have seen in the 70s and 80s. So this is a very, very smart, very well-crafted, and very personality and character-driven study, and it rings true, the sibling relationship between Trish and Derry. It is really, really genuine, and there's a lot of playful banter between the two, and she, you know, derides him for taking his laundry home for the weekend, as is the want of many a college student to get their parents to do it. And she says, you know, you got to grow up. And there really is a very, very delightful, very close bond between the two. I mean, you figure as much, given that he's able to convince her that they should be good Samaritans and they should return to a potential scene of the crime and see what is actually amiss. And what is down there at the bottom of the pipe is quite, I mean, that is really, really sinister. And this is all like the bringing together of this stylistic, very horrifying conceit that hasn't even introduced us to the antagonist yet. And I believe in the production, they kept the title creepy character separate from the two principals so that it would have a massive and more jarring impact on them when they were first introduced. So it's really quite cool how this character is conceived. And he almost has like a Phantom of the Opera, Phantom of the Paradise kind of vibe in a way, but also sports a shock of hair that's almost like, the character from Rocky Horror Picture Show, the custodian, whose name escapes me right now. But he's got these kinds of, like, it almost looks like a Fibes character and something that Vincent Price would have played. So it has this, but also elements of Darkman, too. So it's a very unique, very sui generis, very, 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 very memorable character in this film, and that's driving things. And again, you reach these points where you think and where the audience can breathe a sigh of relief when the siblings actually do get in touch with law enforcement, and you think things are going to turn into a procedural or go down a completely different path, which it turns out they do. I mean, they seek help at this local diner that's filled with the types of people who would typically populate a exploitation genre film. A bunch of hillbillies who you think, oh, they might be in on it. They might be some sort of extended inbred family that's going to turn on these two outsiders. But that is not, resolutely not the dynamic that Jeepers Creepers fosters. And that is, again, what makes it so unique. In fact, there, at least some of them are sympathetic to the fact that a murder that maybe Derry must have or might have been witness to a murder, and the attending officers do go out to this church with this mysterious pipe leading to its basement, and they do go to investigate, but not before there's a mysterious fire. And again, there's so many events set into motion and so much within Jeepers Creepers that puts it into a different sphere. There's a psychic who contacts the twosome and has some unique, I guess, advice to impart to them, which is very, very cool and very interesting, and which involves, of all things, a phonograph recording and reference to the song Jeepers Creepers, again, Where'd You Get Those Eyes? And which is a song that is, you know, inherently disturbing, and I think it sounds like something that would have been would have been probably put together in the Tin Pan era of the singer-songwriting era, maybe in the 1910s or 1920s. I'm not sure of the backstory, but it has that kind of sensibility. And the constant reference to this piece of music is also a cool insert, and what makes the proceedings kind of interesting as well. Not to mention the fact that not only are the police very helpful and very accommodating, they also show up at a reasonably, you know, in reasonable numbers as befits the emergency that they're investigating. So there's lots of things that this movie subverts in terms of expectations that are really, really different, because you would typically see some ineffectual law enforcement who maybe are very dismissive of someone's account of some kind of horror, or who get there late, or maybe, I mean, there's all sorts of things. The law enforcement doesn't typically come up smelling like roses in the horror space, that's definitely for sure. And but this one, they're very, I mean, they're numerous. I mean, you almost think of Assault on Precinct 13 when you see just the sheer volume of first responders in this movie, but who find themselves almost no match for this creep-style character, who at one point sprouts wings like some sort of 18th century gargoyle, or maybe a Q the Winged Serpent or something to that effect. It's absolutely wild. And this is a film that, again, it just pulls you in all sorts of different genre, subgenre directions, but maintains a core and maintains a sensibility and a POV that keeps it very distinct and very unique and very intriguing at every turn. And this is a lean, mean, like atmosphere-fueled effort, and with dynamite performances across the board, really cool directional pivots and all changes that come at you from left and right that can't, you know, that keep you guessing in the best possible way, in a way that's very, very intriguing and very, very interesting. I mean, you know, it's one of the things I've learned is that I guess this writer-director at the helm of this Victor Salva, I believe he envisioned Lance Henriksen to star in this one, which could have been very interesting too. Of course, he of, well, a whole, you know, slew of horror films, whether it's the likes of, you know, Pumpkinhead, which would have been a similarly styled seasonal effort. And I think Salva did work with him on some other project, but which I haven't seen. But it would have been an interesting production with him involved too, because you got to love Henriksen's visage. He's such an iconic character, regardless of what he's appearing in, and it's super, super cool to see him anytime, really. And this one just takes you through all sorts of twists and turns, and it even has, of all things, another thing I've learned here, a crazy cat lady. And it's something, obviously, those of us who were Simpsons fans would have, you know, been quite fond of too, because there's that recurring character of the crazy cat lady with the, you know, snaggletooth lady with like 100 cats, and there's a similar character here who again plays against type, where you figure that person would be either the relative of or part of the extended family of some genetic defectives, a la The Hills Have Eyes, or some sort of, you know, standard, the bearer for the exploitation, subgenre. But again, it turns out to be just a good Samaritan, helpful old lady to the siblings when they try and seek roadside assistance at, you know, some, you know, I guess some Midwest rural rustic, geography. And this is actually references to, I think, in addition to, I mentioned Duel and the likes of Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, but there's also a little bit of a kind of a Children of the Corn vibe here too. And you got scarecrows, and you got a very, very compelling visual aesthetic that draws you into this, where it's almost immaterial that the antagonist is actually of supernatural provenance. It could have been, and very easily might have been, something that of a more conventional exploitation antagonist, a la, let's say, the movie Hatchet, or one of these innumerable copies thereof, or again, like The Wrong Turn. It could have been someone who's far less interesting as an antagonist, but what they do give you is someone who's got that, again, Phantom of the Paradise kind of mask and visual aesthetic that makes it makes Jeepers Creepers very unique, and which again puts Justin Long in very compromising positions, as he's oft to be in the various horror films that he's been in. But this is very, very, very unique and very cool. I'm going to give it 3.5 out of 5. And there's been calls to boycott engagement with this series and with this franchise, because it's going to line the pockets of a Victor Salva, who you should never work in this business again. And I say you can read about his criminal exploits on your own time, as I don't want to get involved in that or into that. But again, like, this wasn't something I was aware of, and it was a franchise that had only variously been associated with by just viewing, I think, little clips, or I've never really seen it end to end and given it its full due and realized to the extent to which it really is, especially of the time when horror was really in a lull and in a funk, as this was kind of betwixt and in between the post-Scream meta self-referential era of the I Know What You Did Last Summer, but also what would be forthcoming, which be the torture porn of the Saw movies, and also the kind of harrowing, really, really intense psychological horrors of the French New Wave. This was smack dab in the middle of that. So I think this was a 2001 effort. So on the heels of something like an American Psycho, that kind of period that was a little dodgy for 5 or 6 years until the good people of France revived it and put horror on the map with an entirely new style of being and way of producing horror. But Jeepers Creepers can stand among the very best from that period. And 3.5 out of 5 is, I think, a very solid, very, very accurate, in my estimation, review of where this thing takes you. And the denouement is fantastic. The conclusion is something very harrowing, as befits a very, very anxiety-inducing film on many fronts, but also one that includes a lot of fun set pieces that has a sense of humor. That has a sense of humor about itself, which is much appreciated as well. And I hope you continue to appreciate this podcast. Continue to listen, tell all your friends, and look out for new episodes every Friday. Talk to you soon. Take care. Thank you.